This is November 24th, 1986. An interview with Charles Foster, formerly with the financial end of the State University of New York. The interview is by Carl Hartzell at the old D&H building, now University Plaza in Albany, New York. Get down as much information as I can. What are the major sources?
I would think that the best source actually would be the minutes of the Board of Trustees.
Right. I have no problem with that.
I don't know of anything else that gives a continuous and step-by-step actions, which were the official actions of the university in relation to Stony Brook and the master plan and all of those factors which went into the actual development of Stony Brook as the university center.
All right, I think I'm going to talk with Martha Downey too. And
but I know from my own experience in going through the minutes of the board for different things that I had to do, that I couldn't find anything else that was as accurate and as comprehensive as the minutes were.
Okay. Now the who are some of the people with whom I should talk?
Well, I think you ought to talk with Ellen Stevens,
right?
Because he was at that time in that development process. He was the vice president for facilities, and he had to be involved in the actual development of the program.
There was a state architect.
Oh yes, White.
White.
White. Yes. He was the state architect.
Oh, wow.
His name was White.
Yeah.
And he lived on Staten Island.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. And, Steve could tell you
about that.
He dealt with him because he was a right-hand man for Otto Teagan, who was big university architect.
Yes.
But I would say that in terms of the dealing with the university architect and the problems that were involved there, and also doing what had to be done in relation to the acquisition of property, etc. I would say, well, because Otto Teagan is dead, but Steve would be the one that would know.
Is Herb Gordon still living?
Herb Gordon? Or you mean Stuart Gordon?
He was in charge, when I was dealing with him, of land acquisition.
Oh, yeah, Herb Gordon, he's still here in the university.
He's still here?
Yes, he handles, yes, that's true. Yes, he's still here at the University Center Administration. He handles now more legislative relations, but yes. He's still here. I would say, well, there are other people now, of course, like Larry Murray, who was had a very close relationship with Frank Moore, and also had a close relationship and had contacts with Manus and Melville, too, and I remember. So Now, I don't know whether he would be available or not. All I can say is he's been a little difficult to get a hold of. But I would think it's possible he would be someone for you to talk to.
All right. Well,
I don't know. Now, other people that were involved, and from the programmatic side, well, Harry Porter, I don't believe, could do it. I think he's had a stroke.
I've heard that. He's down in Chapel Hill, I believe.
Right. So I would be a little bit doubtful about whether you could talk to him. But on the other hand, his assistant at that time, Jim Frost, who did a lot of the day-to-day work, then, you know, then he went to Connecticut and became head of the higher education program
for the state, in
Connecticut. And
is he in Hartford?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He just retired, I think, this last year. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure he's probably still living. I think he lived in Lincoln, Connecticut. It's a suburb of Hartford.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he would have some recollections that would be worthwhile.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's the kind of a person that might have kept some material, you know, because
right.
he was one of the ones that wrote the first, what you call popular, one volume of state history.
Oh, really?
Of New York. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Along with Cy Surratt. You remember Cy Surratt? He was...
I don't think so.
Well, he was president of Queens College, then he came to State University and was kind of second in charge of the University Central Administration.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been a historian at Columbia.
The name is familiar, but
I think his first name was Harold, but I Surratt, they would call him Cy Surratt. Well, he's died now, but but I said Frost, because of his interest in New York history and I'm sure particularly his interest in State University, he might well have kept some records which in addition to his recollection might be well worthwhile, because he was really the assistant provost that dealt as Harry Porter's assistant, who would have been dealing with those problems from a program curriculum basis in relation to the master plan.
When did Harry come in, do you remember?
Let's see. Well, he left Fredonia. He was president of Fredonia, and then Oscar Lanford replaced him as president
right?
of Fredonia.
I see.
And I'm not sure exactly, but I would say, in the early 50s.
Oh. That's pretty early.
Yes.
I thought he can't have come in the early 60s.
Oh, no. No, he came in before that, because Well,
when I came on the job, September
62. Yeah, well, he was, I'm trying to think now. But see, I'm sure he was provost when Hamilton was president.
Yes.
And so that was in the...
When did Hamilton... When
well, Hamilton came in the mid-50s, he came in, well, a little after that, because Carlson was president in 54, and then there was an interregnum period there when Charlie Garside was the acting president, as I remember, and then they had the... while I was after he left, we were there for about a year. Then Larry Murray and Jarvie and Dr. Cooper kind of divided it up. But
Cooper?
Yeah.
Charles Cooper?
No, Herman Cooper, who was in charge of the teachers' college. They kind of divided up the chores of the executive position until I think it was 58 or 59. I think probably 59 that
Hamilton came in then.
Because
he came in from Michigan State.
He gave his inaugural address up at Page Hall at the same time, that would probably have been early 1960, just after Rockefeller became governor.
I see.
And the governor spoke at that session as well. And Hamilton gave a masterful talk, and at that point Rockefeller gave a terrible talk, and he realized how badly he appeared, and he hadn't recognized how important this occasion would be, and he never got over it. He never, always held that against Hamilton.
Yes, Hamilton.
Yeah, because Hamilton did such a outstanding job, and at that point, Rockefeller was not a good public speaker.
Yes, sir.
He had dyslexia, you know, and he couldn't read a speech very well. He could do a pretty good talk if he were talking without a script, but it took him a little while before he got to the point where he could give a halfway decent talk from a script. But it was one of those things that so his relationships were never very good with Hamilton, and that was why I think one of the reasons why Hamilton ultimately left.
Blaney and Blagan are two names that I'm confused about.
Blaney? I don't know Blaney, but Blagan was the fellow that Carlson hired to write the so-called famous or infamous Blagan Report on the State University. He was hired to come and make an analysis of the state universities at that time and make recommendations for what he felt what the university should plan for in the future. And Carlson, well, to lay the background, the original Board of Trustees and Governor Dewey were anti-expansion of State University in terms of university, anything like university centers or double arts colleges.
Mm-hmm.
They felt that this was something that would be too competitive with the private colleges in the state. Dewey recognized, particularly because he was running for president in 1948, that you couldn't be on a national basis against public higher education on a broad scale. So, as he did in many other occasions, he said, well, I can't oppose the state university. I've got to support the state university and support their having professional schools, particularly in medicine and dentistry, but he was very much opposed to having them getting into a university program on a liberal arts and graduate work, etc. So he appointed a number of people on the original board of trustees who were like-minded, one of whom at that time was Dwight Marvin, was the publisher of the Troy Record, Frank Moore, who at that time
was he as lieutenant governor then?
No, he was state controller. He had two terms as state controller and then became lieutenant governor.
What was your position here, actually? Were you controller or?
The original title in 49, when the university started, was business assistant to the president. And
that was
Al Yurick was the president.
I see. In 49?
Yes. Yes, Yurick started his term of office on January 1949, and I came in. Well, then the university had started its operation April 1st, 1949. Before that, it was the budgets and the executive control was completely under the regents and the Commissioner of Education. Now, even as of April 1st, 1949, it wasn't clear what the relationship of the university to the Board of Regents and the Commissioner was.
Did it ever become clear?
Not until there was legislation which was later passed, which made it clear, which did take it out from under. That legislation provided that it was under the was not under the administrative control of the regents or the commissioner, but the Board of Regents had to approve the master plan of the state university and had the right to review its proposed curricula and approve them, just like they did theoretically with the private colleges and still do. However, they tended to be much more in detailed control over the curricula of as proposed by the state university than they were with many of the private colleges. So for a few years there, before that legislation was passed, which also did some other things, there were some changes in the civil service law in relation to the appointment of the academic. Mm-hmm. Well, positions not just faculty, but
academic
pseudo-academic
administrative
position.
Yeah, right.
We're put in for the unclassified mm-hmm. service, mm-hmm. and with the provisions that the titles and the approvals had to be first approved by the budget director, and then it became more or less perform as far as the Civil Service Department is concerned. So that from that point on, the Regents program was essentially one of approving the annual master plan. Well, there's a requirement that every 4 years there be a new master plan developed, but there could But even in between times, as they propose something new through the actions of the Board of Trustees, they're supposed to go to the Regents for their approval before they were finally put into effect and approved by the governor. Ultimately, the governor has to approve them. I noticed this year that one of the criticisms that Cuomo had and the Board of Regents was that they weren't really doing their job as far as master planning, if there's any significance as far as higher education in New York State is concerned. That was among his other criticisms that he had in his battle with them this last year or two.
The Blagan Report.
Let me get back to the Blagan Report. The Blagan Report did make a recommendation that the state university should have at least a major university center, if not at least one, if not more. Now, there had been in the original legislation in relation to the state university a provision in that statute that said the university could establish a major university center. But that was never implemented, and as a matter of fact, was seriously objected to by Governor Dewey. And when the Associated Colleges, which had been Champlain College, had been taken over by the university, when the Associated Colleges disbanded their corporation, when he realized that there was a reverter clause in the title of the property back to the federal government, and they wanted to build a bomber base, he encouraged them and quickly ceded had the property go back to the federal government, and Champlain College closed up. He did go along with the conversion of Triple Cities Colleges in Binghamton. Wasn't actually in Binghamton, but
Bestow.
Yeah, Bestow, but I'm not Bestow, Endicott.
I dig it.
Yeah. Become a small liberal arts college, and that was the first one that was approved, called Harper College. But he didn't see that as a major development at the university.
Why do you suppose he appointed the Young Commission on the Napier State University?
He appointed the Young Commission
prior to 48.
Yes, so that was appointed because there was so much furor politically in the legislature in relation to the discrimination against minorities, primarily Jewish and Italian, actually. That time, not black, in terms of getting into professional schools, particularly medical schools, dental schools, and the regents actually, in some of the papers, like Chancellor Wallen, had strongly supported legislation that had been introduced in the state legislature, which clearly indicated that private colleges had the right to discriminate on admissions. And this became a real battleground in terms of the need for doing something about higher education outside the regents who were really just planting their feet and trying to do as little as possible. But with the tremendous demand for additional higher education after the war, which made evident that something more permanent than the temporary arrangements that had been made immediately for a few years after the war, then he felt that this was something, and he wanted to get it out from under the regents, because he didn't feel anything would happen unless it was.
Alex L. Henderson, I think, was Associate Commissioner for Higher Education.
That's right. Well, Alex, I knew him, and J. Hillis Miller was his assistant then, and then later on, Newsom became, was an assistant there. After J. Hillis Miller left, went to, I guess it was North Carolina. But Alger Henderson left because when he realized that what the Regents had hoped for was that, and what they had lobbied for until they lost, they had lobbied for legislation that would clearly make the development of higher education under the control of the Board of Regents and the Commissioner of Education. And Alger Henderson was supposed to be the one that was going to head up that and the development of whatever was supposed to be developed in public higher education within the Education Department. But when the legislation was ultimately passed, and they lost, well, then he left.
Yeah. Okay. The Blagan report was not implemented.
Well,
because of the actual situation in the state, wasn't it?
It was not implemented. Carlson had been told by the Board of Trustees that he was not to move to implement the Blagan report, but he went ahead and did it. He had Dan Button, his public relations person, leaked it around, got it out to the press, and Carlson had been warned if he did this, they had other differences with him, but they said if he did this, he would have to go. And so he was forced to resign as a result of that, because he had violated the directive of the Board of Trustees. Of course, the papers on the whole, and particularly the New York Times, they had this didn't make it any better for Carlson. They had indicated that they thought this was a good report and this was something that the university ought to do, but the tide was not at end for that. What happened really after that was, of course, there were very limited funds available, capital funds available, so that was another reason why the trustees were somewhat opposed to this, because the development of the state university was going to have to be more or less on a cash, you know, this was going to have to be financed out of the current budget. The university recognized at that point, and there was a resolution passed in the legislature for a $150 million bond issue for development of a state university, and it did relate to a master plan which had finally been approved by the university.
Who did the master plan? Who drew it up?
State University, Central Administration.
This is prior to Hamilton.
It really came with Hamilton.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, who called for the Heald report? Who got Heald?
Oh,
So that's, is it 58 or 59?
A little before then, I believe. He was president of NYU at that point, I believe. The trustees were pushing to have a study made because they realized that the university was kind of frustrated. They couldn't really get the kind of a president for the university that they needed with the great uncertainty as to what the development was going to be for the university. And they needed some outside support. Well, they got the Heald Commission established to make that. And he did give support for a development of the university, which was going to be more than a collection of just professional schools and community colleges and teachers' colleges.